You're listening to Funny You Should Ask, the podcast of Belmont Wesley Fellowship. I'm David Hollis. I'm your host and the campus minister for Belmont Wesley Fellowship. And I'm joined today via fascinating new technology that we're either going to really love or hate mercilessly. I'm joined by Sarah McQuirt Toller, who is a friend both of the podcast and of me and of Belmont Wesley. And she, among many other things, is an original member, a charter member, an original gangster, if we can still say those things, for Belmont Wesley Fellowship. So she was there when the campus ministry started and was an original board member and has been extremely supportive and amazing of our work, and she is now also serving as, I believe, is it the minister to people and other animals? Is that your title?
I'm the pastor of community life at a United Methodist Church north of Nashville.
Connell, is that correct?
Connell Memorial.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I always want to say like either Connell or, yeah, it's awful the way I pronounce things. And so also Sarah shared in our questioning, which is the series that you're listening to now on this podcast, Somebody Told Me. And Sarah wanted to share some thoughts that she had regarding her time as a college student. So I will invite her to be as expansive as she wants to in her advice. And we will take it from there. But just to remind you, this is a series focused on people who have already been through the college journey and are looking back and saying, maybe I wish somebody had told me this when I was starting college, or maybe even like kind of in the midst of college, whatever kind of situation that goes. So, Sarah, say more about your thoughts.
Well, I feel like my advice should really be titled Things People Told Me I Didn't Listen To, as opposed to
Even
advice
better.
Nobody told me.
Yes.
So I will say I went to college just having turned 17, which is maybe a little different from a lot of other people's experiences. And I, definitely looking back on my college experience, feel like I didn't have a very grounded sense of self. And I'm probably a naturally insecure person, but multiply that by being 17, being away from home,
right,
and all those 1,000 things. I guess I'm going to be one of those people that talks about the Enneagram. Are those people the worst?
Those people are allowed here. No, that's okay. I'm not able to be the arbiter of if they're the worst, but I can say that it's allowed. So, yeah.
So, if you're into the Enneagram, I'm a number type 6. And so
I feel like that's
gather.
Rare. Are you a rare animal?
No. 6 is the most popular.
Oh, so I don't know anything that I'm saying. Okay. Good.
So, one of the hallmark of 6s is anxiety and insecurity.
Sure.
But specifically in a way that I tend to seek out like group opinions and assurance from like my 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 trusted people.
Uh-huh.
And so I went into college not really having that on the ground. And so I think I sought out narrow and intimate relationships as opposed to like wider cast, getting involved on campus kind of things. And when you put your eggs in the basket of that, you can really be rocks when relationships change.
Yeah.
And so, let's see, I started college dating somebody long distance, which was a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably undo dating long distance. Not undo having dated that person, but
Right.
Undo deciding to go into college as a freshman dating long distance.
I feel like that is something that a lot of students I meet run into, that like they had like a high school relationship and, you know, they're bringing that with them, but it's now like a long distance relationship and that person is maybe in school somewhere else, maybe not. And so, yeah, that in and of itself is a tricky needle to thread, right?
Well, and I, in a very strange, like, series of circumstances, started dating that person long distance.
Gotcha.
So I started dating long distance, transitioned to college long distance. So a true nightmare.
Right.
So I had that kind of basket to put my security into, and we very quickly split up, like, by Labor Day or something ridiculous.
Right.
Like that.
Before some schools have started.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right. And then I didn't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. I was not in college far away from home, but my family had good boundaries about, like, I didn't go home Labor Day weekend. Like, I felt like everyone else did. And I didn't have a real strong connection with my roommate. And ultimately, actually, in February, she decided she couldn't live with me and moved out. And then I lived alone.
Wow, that's a lot all at once.
And then, weirdly enough, my sophomore year, my roommate was in a car accident in September and ended up having to take the semester off. So then I ended up living alone again for a semester. So I had kind of a very bizarre start to this experience, but you see that my people of security disappeared.
Right, yeah.
And so I guess in the midst of those two things, I started dating a Vanderbilt student who I'd known through high school. But did he have a car? I'm trying to remember. I definitely didn't have a car. We stayed young and fit by walking across Nashville to meet up. But
it's not a far walk, but it's not a close walk either.
Well, yeah, I'm old. When I started college was when the big, like, freshman complex opened over there.
Okay.
So it was a bit of a hike from my dorm, which doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But was in the quad area. Do they still call it that?
It's generally not referred to.
Oh, okay. I used to live in Hale Hall.
Yeah.
Near two buildings, I guess, that don't exist anymore. So this is not particularly relevant.
What is relevant, I think, and deeply important for listeners to know, is that there were no rentable motorized scooters.
And that's so correct. So no, we actually
there was no
had
kind
to
walk. You could ride a bike, but you'd also
be
struck by a car
not
on any of the roads.
That's correct.
Because there were no bike lanes, and even if there were, it's Nashville and no one cares. So
right, and so I didn't have a smartphone, and like Uber and Lyft weren't a thing.
Gosh,
so
that's
so
amazing to think about.
I know, it's so funny to think about.
Because we're really, all things considered, we're not that elderly. Like,
no, but it feels like the college experience has changed so radically.
It's creepy. Yeah.
I was just talking at my job about students doing digital learning right now and how I got a laptop the day I moved into college.
I didn't have one in college. I did not. I got a laptop for Divinity School. I did not have a laptop in college. I had a desktop that weighed millions of pounds and dial up. So it was truly hideous.
Yeah, we had Ethernet in my dorm room. So yeah, I started dating that person and spent a lot of my time transient in between the two places, especially since there were like rules about people of the opposite sex at Belmont and all of that. So it made space and time complicated. And I was a really good student, so my focuses were being a really good student, and then I don't know that I would have thought then being a good girlfriend, but like being a partner or being in a relationship. And one thing that I've learned about myself in my ripe old age is that I tend to commit to commitments instead of people.
Ah.
Which, makes dating kind of complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my mom watched, how serious too quickly my relationship came. And she told me, you should see each other twice a week. Pick one day of the week and then pick one day of the weekend and like set those days aside for being together or doing, you know, doing whatever dating, college things are. And then invest in your own social life and go out and do things with your dorm friends and, you know, join clubs at school. I don't know. Social things did not come easily to me. And so it was easier for me to invest in this one-on-one experience versus the discomfort of engaging in those bigger social things, which did not come naturally to me.
Right.
And so I didn't listen to my mom.
Right. Yeah.
And then when junior year came around and my then boyfriend joined a fraternity, we split up. And then my college experience was kind of halfway done, and I didn't I have friends, like a few, that I had invested some time in. I was in the honors program, so that was a smaller, close-knit group of people who traveled through classes together. It was, if you're in the honors program or entering it now, it was very different when I was there. So I had those folks that I spent time with, but there was also this big hole in my time and how I related to college, because I spent a lot of my time at Vanderbilt, where I was not a student.
Right.
And so I didn't invest in my own experience, my own collegiate experience. And I look back and I feel like I really missed things because I didn't listen to my mom on purpose.
It wasn't just that you tripped and like didn't hear what she said. It was like, I hear you and I'm not going to listen to you.
That's correct.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in, because, you know, I know you to know that you, and I guess I, in some ways I want to be careful how I say this, but and also other ways I don't really care, but I know that you are a person in the South, but not necessarily of the South, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Would you say that about yourself, or like, are you?
Yeah, I definitely am born and raised in the South.
Yeah.
From Maryland transplants.
Right.
So, like, the fake South.
Right.
But definitely, like, Southern ideals of politeness. And
right.
I'm also the first born in my, not just my, like, my sibling generation, but my whole generation. And I'm the firstborn woman, and my mom was the firstborn of hers, and my grandmother was the firstborn of hers.
Oh, wow.
And so my family was very close-knit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was my grandmother, actually my great-grandmother, before she died, my grandmother, my mom, myself, and my sister. And so the eldest women are caretakers.
Okay.
And so there's definitely that expectation.
Right.
Or that's not fair. Expectation is not the right word. Just what happened.
Right. Yeah.
The people in
the
my
reality.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people in my family take care of each other because that's what families do. But
right.
That responsibility seems to fall particularly firmly on these first women.
Right. And I, one of the reasons I bring up just the South, I haven't really lived elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I've been elsewhere and I've stayed elsewhere, but I haven't really lived elsewhere. But typically, I have felt and observed, certainly in the South, maybe it's elsewhere, maybe not as much, a culture where there is almost this expectation of women in college that if you are not engaged by, you know, you're certainly when you graduate, but like
mm-hmm.
for some places it feels even like your junior year of college or something.
Yeah.
That you know, you'll be like thrown out on, you know, fiery Gehenna where there's, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth. And also to take, you know, to let people know Belmont is a growing, but it's still a fairly small, and was at your time even smaller, private Christian, was for many, many years Baptist.
Came in right on the tail end.
Was severed right before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's all of that mixed in as well, mm-hmm. with having, you know, people who I grew up with actually still use the phrase. They didn't use it typically about themselves, but they would use it about people in their schools. You know, she's getting her MRS degree.
Oh, totally.
And so, like, I think trying to understand, and again, for some of my students, or some of our students at Beaumont Wesley, you know, they don't have that really necessarily in their heads at all, but it's so much still in the water.
Oh, totally. I mean, to be totally transparent, I married another college boyfriend.
Right.
And we had a long engagement, but did get engaged my senior year of college.
Right.
And so, yeah, and that definitely was in the water, and I definitely wasn't the first of my friend group for that to happen to. And I know, let's see, it's such a curious place to be in to kind of deconstruct what was in the water versus what you internalized and what you actually, you know, actually thought.
Right.
Or really yearned for. But yeah, I mean, I expected to come out of college planning to get married.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I did not seek it out, I don't think, super intentionally. Like, I did not date a bunch.
Right.
The person I ended up marrying, he was planning to go to a military academy, and I was not about that life. And so we started seeing each other with my upfront intention that we would split up when he left. And, you know, now we have an almost 2-year-old, so oops. So that was my attitude kind of ending college. So I had these kind of wild swings of, like, I had definitely planned to marry that first person I dated in college, and then I ended up marrying this person I intended to, like, casually date for fun.
Right.
My junior year.
Yeah. So, I mean, the overall, I tend not to, again, I have super sort of wild and positions which are quite extreme, but generally I do tend to live in more of a middle way. What is the middle way of, in your opinion, of not coming in necessarily and saying, you know, I'm not doing this at all, I don't care about finding anybody, I'm not going to find anybody here anyway, forget all this, I'm going to wait until I'm, you know, in dental school, versus it being all you care about?
You know, what I've thought about, I ended up having a degree that I used in the workforce for a couple of years, and then did a 180, and now I'm a pastor.
Right.
I used to work in the music business, but I went in wanting to study what I wanted to study, and then I figured out near the end of my sophomore year, I guess, or I'm sorry, beginning of my junior year, that I hated everything that I had done, mm-hmm. but it was too late to start over.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to have college funding.
Right.
So it became like, how can I add a minor and, like, make things feel better? Because mm-hmm. I now have an understanding of what I think my life actually could be,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, it was like what I said earlier, I had committed to the commitment of doing these things, and then it turned out I didn't actually want to do them.
Right.
But I was kind of in too deep to really turn around. And so I wonder about those first couple of years of college where you don't have to declare a major and you're getting to do some exploration, being out on your own and what you really love, and then how you find people who are doing those same things.
Right.
So I wonder if I could go back and do things over, I look at how different it was to date someone at the end of my college experience, and he was even further along in his, mm-hmm. where he had cast a vision for what his life was going to be like and what
right.
his goals were, as opposed to someone who was just naive enough to think that she knew at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's a place for that as you grow and as you figure out what your priorities in life are. Look for the people who have figured those things out too.
That sounds very Mr. Rogers-like.
Well,
and
you know,
I mean that in the best possible way. Because,
well, I look at friends of mine who are, you know, dating now or not partnered, and they have had relationships where they ended up breaking up over things like one of them wanted to get married and the other one never wanted to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And like when my spouse and I started dating, we knew what we wanted about those things.
Right. Yeah.
But we wouldn't have, I didn't know those at 17.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And when I, you know, when I'm meeting with people who, and, you know, we're starting to kind of now get into, I did the first wedding fairly recently of, you know, two people who met through Belmont Wesley. Mm-hmm. And so that was our first, like, you know, a very Belmont Wesley wedding kind of thing. And so one of the things, you know, when I was meeting with them and talking them in kind of marriage prep situation, mm-hmm. and all that, it was, you, I think there's also time where in college you worry perhaps maybe too much about a lot of things that will never happen. And so that's what, you know, we talked about, is I was like, we're gonna talk about kids and where you are with kids, with the realization that there are tons of different things that might happen in your life with kids. One of them
Absolutely.
Being you may not be able to have them naturally. Mm-hmm. And but we can't necessarily do a deep dive into every possible scenario.
Yes.
And so we're going to talk about that and also hopefully give you tools for whenever that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you know to proceed mm-hmm. with as much grace as possible. And so
I think grace is the key. I think that I prided myself on having things figured out, and I didn't allow myself the opportunity to grow until it was, I mean, it wasn't too late. Nothing bad happened to me.
Right.
But
you were still like 20.
Exactly. But I didn't.
But there was time where that could have been a thing, and maybe it wasn't as much a thing.
Yeah. Like, what freedom could I have given myself to figure out what I really loved, or to say, wow, I thought I loved this and I don't. And that's
right.
Fine.
Right.
So I could figure out something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that goes for what I studied, who I dated, you know, who I lived with, all of those things.
Right.
I just wanted to have it figured out, and I missed the process of the figuring.
Well, and the grace also comes with, I think, and is fully invested in the ability to be able to say to yourself, I don't love this and that's okay.
Yes.
Or I don't even like this at all. And mm-hmm. and that's even more than okay. Because once again, here I am 20 and I have a whole lot of the rest of my life to not even have to worry about this thing. And
I ended up my junior year flipping through the course catalog, trying to figure a way that I could salvage the next 2 years without dropping out. And, you know, I ended up in the office of a dear, delightful professor who's still at Belmont. And that's what I told her. I was like, I am miserable.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to fix it. And,
right.
And I like these things, and
right.
your name is next to them. So what options do I have?
Right.
And the grace that she showed me in that was a turning point in my whole experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much. I mean, you know, that's. I don't want to call that a blessing in the sense of necessarily being on the other end of someone coming in and being like, my life has fallen apart or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it is in the sense of being able to say, it's okay because your life is actually just starting. And that's
exactly what
that's
she told
really
me.
Okay.
She called me a stress noodle, which is a German term. if you're thinking about taking a foreign language, take German.
You should take German.
This professor.
If nothing else, you'll be able to watch Dark, and you can watch it in the original language as opposed to these
So she always called me a stress noodle, that I was so focused on achievement or eliminating the unexpecteds or the unknown.
Yeah.
That I was missing all of the opportunities because of my just need to, I guess, control.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember German for stress noodle?
It's stress noodle.
Oh, it's okay. So it goes pretty easily into. Okay. I didn't know if it was like Konfang Konklefen or something. You know what I mean? With German, it feels like a, yeah. With English and German, it's either exactly that or it's nothing at all. So cool, Sarah. Thank you so much for your time, your insight, your vulnerability, and your German. And
thank you.
I'm really thankful that I know you and that you're connected with Beaumont Wesley, and that all those humans and other animals at Connell Memorial also get to hang out with you.
Me too.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening, friends. We will be back next week with someone who's almost as good as Sarah, so you'll want to listen to that too. Bye for now.